Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Skyline studio here, 18 stories above beautiful downtown Chicago. It's Tuesday morning. That means two for Tuesday. Get your requests in now. One artist, two songs. 312-981-7200. 312-981-7200. A little bit later on, in honor of, we're celebrating a lot of 50th anniversaries. Just this past weekend, obviously, Saturday was the 50th anniversary of the Apollo 11 moon landing. And 1969 was a pretty interesting year, so we're also just going to be talking about Woodstock here in a couple of seconds, and then a little bit later on, we're going to talk about the 30 best albums of 1969, and some people didn't get famous till after 40, so we're going to talk about some A-listers who didn't hit their stride till after 40. But we were just listening to some music there that you heard from Woodstock, and I want to welcome the folks over at Great Moments in Vinyl. Lindsey Cochran puts this together, and they do gigs pretty frequently. And we want to welcome two people from Great Moments in Vinyl. They've been on the show many times, Lindsey Cochran and Richard Pettengill. And guys, welcome back.
Thank you so much.
Richard, I haven't seen you in a long time.
Yeah, it's good to be back,
yeah,
Nick.
It's great. Great to see you guys. So as we always do, tell everybody about Great Moments in Vinyl.
We're just a bunch of music fans. We like to pick an album. Usually it's an album. Sometimes we'll do something a little off the beaten track, like this Woodstock show. But
yeah,
we pick an album of music, maybe two albums by an artist, and put it together on a stage. And the whole point is not for us to be there to say, hey, look at us. Look how cool we are. It's more like, wasn't this a great album?
Yeah.
Didn't you enjoy it too? So that's what we're all about. So for the Woodstock show, we thought, well, we don't want to do the Woodstock album. I mean, do we really need to remember Sha-na-na? I'm not sure. So what we did is went through the set list of the Woodstock show, and bands like Sweetwater and Quill and Incredible String Band, they didn't make the cut, but we picked songs from Janis Joplin, as you heard, Santana, The Who, Jimi Hendrix, of course, and some of the early stuff, some of the acoustic stuff at the beginning of the show, Richie Havens. Burt Summer, a name you never hear, yeah, but an amazing version of Simon Garfunkel's America at Woodstock. So that's part of our set.
That's great.
As well.
That's really, really great. How long has Great Moments in Vinyl been around now?
Oh, dear. 6 years, or starting our seventh year in August.
And I think you guys have come in pretty much regularly on this show since then, right?
Thank you so much for
that. Since the beginning?
Absolutely. Well, once we got the foot in the door on the Nick DiGilio show, we said, oh, we like talking to him. We'll go back and do that again.
Well, that's really...
Because we do.
We love having you guys on.
Well, you're a music fan.
Yes, I am.
You know, you get it.
I am. So, Woodstock. Now, the thing is, Richard Pettengill, who is with us, first of all, when did you start playing?
I started playing guitar at the age of 13. Mm-hmm. I got my first Fender guitar at that point. I said to my dad, I need an electric guitar. I need to learn guitar. So he took me shopping. We got myself a Fender Mustang.
Mustang, yes.
Which, you know, was not a cool guitar until Kurt Cobain picked one up.
Right.
It was like, I made a mistake.
Out of your time.
I made the mistake of getting a Mustang. Should have held out for a Strat.
Yeah.
Of course, I could probably retire now if I'd held on to that Strat.
Yeah, absolutely. So that's where you started. Was it the music that you were listening to that inspired you to pick up the guitar?
Yeah, I was listening to a lot of very cool guitar players, especially like Mike Bloomfield was an early like inspiration. And so I sat down, I just tried to play what he was playing.
Yeah.
Just by ear.
Yeah. Yeah.
And John Fogerty too.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Oh, Lindsey, what about you? You started playing music at what age?
Oh, well, see, I never answer the question directly, do I? I would say junior high, because they had a band program. And that's how I started.
High school band?
Junior high.
Junior high band, yeah.
So middle school, I guess you would say, in Illinois. So seventh grade, picking up the trombone, of all things, which was because Chicago was popular back then.
Right.
So, and I guess I like Jethro Tull, too, but, you know, somehow the flute seemed a little too much. Trombone, let's just move the slide, you know, just put it here, put it there, and away you go. So that's what I started on. Mm-hmm. Got into the music program at the school and learned how to read music and what chords, how you put those together, and just went off from there.
Yeah.
Started making music.
You mentioned Jethro Tull, you mentioned the flute. Nobody but Ian Anderson plays flute in rock and roll, right? I mean, he's the only guy.
Well, there's a guy in Blues Project, was it?
There was one song called Flute Thing by the Blues Project.
Uh-huh. An odd little band called C-Train, I think, had a flute. Well, in Blood, Sweat, and Tears, one of the guys in that band played the flute. But you're right.
I mean, as far as front men go.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Yeah, as far real as performers men. Like Ian Anderson.
Yeah, well, yeah. But, and Ian Anderson is one of the greatest front men ever.
Absolutely.
He's unbelievably entertaining.
We were just talking about Tull in the car. We should do a Jethro Tull show.
Oh, sometime. I love Jethro Tull, man. Man. Who are you going to get for the flute?
Probably the bar owner at Martyrs, because he plays flute very well.
Is that right?
Ray Quinn is really good on flute.
Is that right?
He books Martin Barr on a regular basis there.
Oh, man.
One of the Tull guitarists.
Tull guitarists.
And you could come and tell stories with me.
I saw Jethro Tull, I've like four or five times, I think. And I remember I saw him in 76. 76 or 77 at the stadium.
Songs from the Wood?
It was probably Songs from the Wood. Yeah, it probably was Songs from the Wood.
Or Heavy Horses.
I think it was Songs from the Wood.
Yeah.
And then I saw him. It was funny. But actually, the show that I went to, the specific show that I'm talking about, 76 or 77, whichever year it was, somebody whipped a bottle on stage.
Oh.
Somebody threw a bottle on stage, and it shattered in front of Ian Anderson.
Whoa.
And he said, and he stopped, they stopped the song, and he said, "We're not going to play again until that blank gets kicked out." And he pointed up to the balcony, and it was on the right side of the balcony. It was first balcony, I think.
Wow.
And so the spotlight guy put a spotlight over, and you could see the drunken idiot was up there. And then a whole bunch of people jumped on him and started beating the hell out of him. And
there is justice in the world.
And they carried him out. The Andy Frains, remember the old Andy Frains?
Right.
The old Andy Frain guys came in, and they were like trying to break it up and everything. And then finally they moved the crowd out. And the spotlight guy swings it back onto the stage, and Ian Anderson's like, "Okay, we can continue." And then they started the song again.
Yes.
But I saw them in 80 something, I want to say 86 or 87. Mm. And it was their, get this, it was when they released the 20th anniversary CDs, the box set with the 20th anniversary.
Purple box set,
And so we went to, and it was the 20th anniversary, and this was supposed to be their retirement tour,
right.
Which is of course true of every band. I mean, the Stones just played Soldier Field a couple of weeks ago, and they're in their mid-70s.
Hope I die before I get old.
Exactly. Right. And the Who is still going, So, but this was really funny because it was the 20th anniversary. It's probably going to be their retirement last time to see Tull, and it was obviously their greatest hits collection. So they were going to do all the stuff, and. When they came out on stage, a couple of them were in wheelchairs being pushed out by nurses. Ian Anderson came out on a gurney, and it was like talking about how
an IV drip. I hope.
They brought out IVs and everything, and the nurses brought them out, and they kind of limped onto the stage. And then they took off. They had the hospital gowns on. They took off the hospital gowns, and then they had their regular clothes on underneath. And then they kicked.
Nice.
They kicked ass. But I find it really funny that was 30 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
And Ian Anderson obviously is still touring.
Well, his voice is not holding up these days, but he's still out there.
Well, he's got to be close to 80, right? Ian Anderson? He's got to be, right?
70.
But he's an incredible front man.
I saw their first American tour, 1968, at the Fillmore East.
Oh, man. Now, some of the concerts that you've gone to.
That's the Richard story
We're going to be talking about that in a second, but you were at Woodstock.
Yes.
I want to make this clear.
Yes.
You were at Woodstock.
I was there.
And you're actually writing a book. You're almost done with a book that you're writing, and what's it called?
It's called Woodstock Boy, a 15-Year-Old in the Garden.
So I want to we're going to get into your experience at Woodstock. We want to talk about Woodstock. What is it, the gathering at Woodstock, Lindsay, historically one of the greatest music festivals of all time,
and
if not the greatest.
It wasn't expected to be anything more than just another concert. There was the Monterey Pop Festival several weeks before that that kind of set the tone. And I think Woodstock was an attempt to capture some of that. Some bands turned down playing there. They thought it was going to be a cheap imitation of the Monterey Pop Festival.
So
they didn't take part in it. But, the stars just aligned and all the things came together and the crowd behaved and it turned into this, I want to say this, the signal point for the generation. David Crosby talks about how seeing that crowd there, the hippies, if you want to call them, the hippie generation realized that they were a movement. They weren't just these isolated islands of alternative people they were actually a movement that could have some strength and some power. And that was why Woodstock was such an energizing force for our generation.
Yeah. Well, you know, and then just a few months later, the dark side of outdoor.
Altamont,
right. Which is just.
But if you read about that, that was because a lot of stupid decisions were made.
Oh, my God. Gimme Shelter is one of my favorite movies of all time. It's a terrifying and incredible movie.
I have an idea. Let's hire the Hell's Angels with a bunch of cases of beer.
You're right. We'll pay them in beer. That's a good idea. It's just such an incredible. I mean, you know, obviously, God, what are the brothers who made the movie?
The Maisleys.
Yeah. They really stumbled onto something. They were just, you know what I mean? It was just like a lot of really lucky or great documentary filmmakers, just something happens while they're filming.
Something horrible happened there.
And it's a really genuinely terrifying movie to watch. Every single time I watch it, I'm just like,
including,
oh my God.
Mick watching the footage afterwards.
Yeah, that's always, that's really interesting to watch, to watch their faces, you know, like Mick watching what happened. You know, we were actually going to do, my theater company and I were actually going to do a stage adaptation of it.
Really?
And the audience was going to be on the stage. The plan was I was going to direct it, and the audience would be like from the point of view of the bands on stage, and we were going to recreate all the stuff that happened and actually ride Harleys into the theater.
Nice.
Because the theater that we were going to do it at had a giant back door that's like a garage door that lifted up, and we were going to roll out the Harleys and actually have them do it. We never got to do it, though. It didn't happen. But anyway, but that represents like the, you know, like they wanted to make another Woodstock, and it just couldn't happen. That was terrible planning and horrible things. But let's talk about the good stuff. We'll talk about Woodstock. You guys hang on for a second. Lindsey Cochran and Richard Pettengill from Great Moments in Vinyl are here, and they're doing the music of Woodstock on Thursday, July 25th at the Rialto Square Theater in Joliet. And we'll get to more of that coming up right after this on 720 WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. That was from Great Moments in Vinyl. You actually performed that on, that was performed on Roe's show, right?
Yeah. He had us on like 2 weeks ago or something like that. Yeah. So I brought it some musicians down here and we did a couple of songs.
Yeah, we got a nice performance space here.
I know.
On the 18th floor. It's really nice.
I guess Jacob Dylan had been there and was bragging about it. Everyone that I saw there said, Jacob loves our performance space.
Well, you know, as soon as we moved here from the Tribune building to 303 Wacker here on the 18th floor, beautiful facilities here, just fantastic. And they did such a nice job adding that performance space.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you can have bands in there, there's a stage, you can watch from there.
Absolutely.
And it's really cool. And and I like this place because I finally have an office. After 30-something years of working here. So welcome back. That Lindsey Cochran and Richard Pettengill are here, Great Moments in Vinyl. And you guys are performing. Great Moments in Vinyl plays the music of Woodstock.
Absolutely.
Celebrating the 50th anniversary of Woodstock. It's July 25th at the Rialto Square Theater in Joliet. Your tickets are available now.
Yes.
So get your tickets now, rialtosquare.com.
Here's our little hint that if you buy them at the box office, you don't have to pay the service fee. Save yourself $15.
Okay, $15 is the service fee?
My partner, Melissa, bought herself one ticket, a $20 ticket. I think the final cost was $34.50 or something.
Jeez.
Are you kidding me? Wow. Well, if you want to order them, you can, rialtosquare.com, or just go to the box office and get them there, but make sure you go. Okay, so who are the other musicians? I know the two of you, Richard and Lindsey. Who are the other musicians?
You met Bill Grady.
Yes.
Who's our Jimi Hendrix and a number of other things for this show. He's going to be part of the band. Andrea Bunch, I believe you met.
Yep.
She's going to be our female singer on a number of things. The Melanie song, the Janis Joplin,
Joan Baez.
Joan Baez, yeah.
Oh, sure.
Grace Slick.
I don't want to give away the little what we're going to do for the encore after Jimmy plays, but it involves a certain song called Woodstock, and so she'll be involved with that. And then, let me see here, we got Dan Ingenthrone, who plays in a lot of bands around in the Chicago area. He's going to be singing a number of songs like the Burt Summer America, the Bad Moon Rising tune from CCR. And Jonathan Reed playing drums. He's the guy that I performed Jimi Hendrix with Bill Grady. And then Christian Rogala, an amazing percussionist and vocalist. When he gets up and does Joe Cocker,
watch out.
That is worth the price of admission.
He channels it, man.
Is that right?
Oh my God. Check out the rehearsal video I have on Facebook.
Oh, okay.
Or, you know, have your producer pull it up. I think I might have given him a clip.
Maybe we'll throw it up on the website.
Absolutely.
So people can check it out.
Use it as one of the bumpers. Because, I mean, this guy, when he sings, you're like, oh, my God.
Okay. John Belushi-like.
You know, but in a respectful kind of way.
Yeah. Well, if you guys have seen that footage of John Belushi singing next to
it's not quite as satiric as Belushi's.
No. But,
I think I was watching live when that happened. I couldn't believe it.
I remember I was watching it, too, and it was
Joe didn't punch him out.
No, he didn't at all. I mean, he had a great, you know, he had a great sense of humor about it and everything, but it was really, because, I mean, that, you know, that was one of Belushi's signature things at National Lampoon and everything. So, but anyway, all right. So now, what was it about the set list? You were trying to not
find
do the stuff that's on the albums.
We wanted to find songs that would represent the bands that were there that people still remember, that still means something to people today. So that's why we picked the songs that we did. The Santana, what we're doing, Can't Heat, Going Up the Country.
Oh, I love that song.
Yeah, I'm playing flute on that.
Who's singing that?
Dan Ingenthrum.
Can he do a good?
we try not to imitate so much.
Oh, okay.
You know, Richard and I went to a show once by Classic Albums Live. Good band. They did David Bowie, but they did the Ziggy Stardust album, and the entire set was kind of a spot on imitation.
Yeah.
And after a while, you're not hearing the music; you're hearing whether or not it sounds like the album.
Right.
And we want to veer away from that.
Yeah, I know that's what you guys are maybe pride yourself on doing.
Kick people back into enjoying the song as it's happening live, rather than saying, "I don't know if he really sounds like Joe Cocker there."
Right.
You know. Anyway.
All right. So you went to Woodstock, Richard.
Yeah.
We have to talk about this.
Okay.
Obviously, you're writing an entire book about it.
Right.
How did this happen? You were 15.
Okay, I was 15. Summer of '69. I was at my summer home in Western Massachusetts, where we had no TV or radio or anything. So the only way I heard about Woodstock was through the New York Times that my uncle had, and I saw that little ad with, you know, the bird on the guitar neck, and I'm like, oh, what's this? Oh my God.
And then you looked at the lineup.
And,
and at this point, you're 2 years into playing guitar.
Yeah, and I had all the albums of all those artists. I was a music fanatic.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I need to go to this thing. Mom, can I go? She's like, sure. I'm like, really? Not only that, she gave me the family car and put a trailer hitch on the car so I could take my uncle's camping trailer up there, and we were comfortable, and we had food and water and a camp stove, and we were dry and sleeping off the ground.
Who else went with you?
My older cousin, Jeff, who was 17, so he could drive. I was 15.
Right.
So, and then my younger cousin, Chris, who was 14.
Okay.
So the three of us went.
Just three teenagers going off to Woodstock.
Yeah.
So you part. What was it? What was the scene like? Like when you arrived?
Well, fortunately, we sent away for the tickets and they didn't arrive. They didn't arrive. Finally, Tuesday before the weekend, they arrive, and we're like, okay, we got the tickets. Let's go.
Yeah.
So fortunately, we went up on Wednesday, 2 days before the music began. It's a really good thing we did, because we just tooled right on in. There was no traffic. There weren't very many people. Nobody cared about us arriving. There was no security, no nothing.
Yeah.
And we drive up this little road, Heard Road, and we don't even know where the stage is. We pull over, and we go, this is a nice place to park.
Yeah.
We get out. We're right at the top of the hill looking down on the stage.
Yeah.
And we parked there for 5 days.
Oh, my God.
Wednesday through Monday morning, the entire time.
Isn't that unbelievable? That's unbelievable. So you was there the whole time. You obviously walked down the hill.
Just walked down the hill, and I was right dead center the entire time. My thing was like the music.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, I saw a picture of you. Lindsay, one of the last times he was here, he has it on his computer, and he showed us a picture of teenage you right in the middle there at Woodstock. It must have been unbelievable. And so as the crowd started to show up, was it, you know, you guys got there very early.
Right.
You got your spot, put your camper in that spot. How soon before you had neighbors?
So Wednesday was pretty chill. Thursday, people started really coming in.
Yeah.
And then by Friday morning, it was packed.
It was completely packed.
Yeah.
That was the atmosphere, or was it just like, was it great?
It was really relaxed. I mean, there was just nobody telling you what to do or what not to do. Completely chill.
Yeah.
And all I did those 2 days was to go skinny dipping in the pond with everybody else.
Yeah.
And then I went to the hog farm, and they were making free natural food, and just hanging out for 2 days.
Yeah.
Waiting for the music to start.
Yeah. And then the rains came.
That was Sunday.
Yeah.
The big there was a little rain Friday. Saturday was not bad. Sunday, the serious rainstorm.
Yeah. Yeah. What was that like?
I mean, it was like intense, but the fortunate thing is this was August. It was 80 degrees.
Yeah.
So let's get wet.
Big deal. Yeah, yeah.
You know, I was warm. I was happy. I just took off my shirt, like in that picture. I was took off my shirt, whatever.
Yeah.
Everyone around me is like covered in ponchos and what. I'm just like, yeah, whatever.
That's
rain.
Well, yeah, you're 15, man. You're 15 and you're at Woodstock. That's absolutely amazing. Do you still have your ticket, Stub?
You know, I had it for years, and during one of those moves, you know, it just
went away. That hurts, yeah. Man.
But I do have my little Hendrix snapshots. I had a little Instamatic camera.
Oh, you had an Instamatic?
I had an Instamatic, and I forgot I had it until the very end, like when Hendrix is playing. And I'm like, oh my God, I have this camera. Start snapping like crazy.
You're going to include those in the book?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you got it.
Yeah, and one of them is on the New York Times website.
Is that right?
Already, yeah.
That you took?
Yeah.
Wow, yeah. That's amazing. Okay, well, let's talk about the music.
Okay.
Okay, so it starts on Friday.
Right.
What time?
About 5:30. I waited all day. I got down there at 8 a.m., waited all day. Just
where was food, water, all that stuff? How did you guys?
You know, there were some drippy little spigots around. You could get a little bit of water. We brought water, like jugs of spring water,
yeah,
and cans of Dinty Moore beef stew that we heated up on a little camp stove in the trailer. So we were set. You know,
that's amazing.
Yeah. So
you're eating Dinty Moore beef stew. You're drinking spring water all weekend long, and just watching the music.
You know, and there was also the hamburger stand up at the top of the hill and the hog farm serving bulgur, wheat, and veggies.
Yeah.
So it was great.
That's amazing.
And everyone says there was no food. There was food.
There was. Did you make friends while you were there? I mean, obviously, you're there for that length of time. You got to meet people.
Sure. I mean, the people sitting around you, everybody's so friendly and warm. Everybody's so nice. I was amazed by, like, I went by myself so I could insinuate myself anywhere I wanted to be, like right dead center in front of the stage.
And you knew where home base was, so you were fine.
It was right up here.
Yeah.
No problem. So. And nobody gave me a hard time.
Yeah.
You know, like, hey, man, we've been here for hours or whatever.
That's great. That's really great. We'll talk about the music and all of that stuff, but we have to take a break. And if you want to hear the music from Woodstock, Great Moments in Vinyl, Lindsey Cochran puts this together and gets, as I've said before, Lindsey, you bring together some of the best, most talented musicians in this city.
I feel so lucky sometimes.
It's unbelievable.
I'm staying. I can't believe what these other musicians. Yeah. I mean, Richard included, the way he plays guitar.
No, he's amazing. And on top of that, I also want to mention Old Town School of Folk, which a lot of people go through those doors who play in your band.
Absolutely.
And that is a breeding ground for amazing musicians.
Yes, absolutely.
So, but anyway, it's going to be Great Moments in Vinyl plays the music of Woodstock. It's July 25th at the Rialto Square Theater in Joliet. You can go to rialtosquare.com. Get your tickets, or you can get them at the box office. Lindsey, Richard, hang on for a second. We'll come back and talk more after this on 720 WGN.
Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I'll try not to sing out of key. Oh, baby, now.
Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN, and it is a Tuesday morning, 2 for Tuesday. Get your requests in now, 312-981-7200, 312-981-7200. We're going to talk about the best albums of 1969, celebrating that great year, and we're going to talk about some A-listers who didn't get famous until after 40. So, sometimes life begins after 40. 312-981-7200 is the phone number for talk and text. What you just heard was Great Moments in Vinyl performing Joe Cocker. And Lindsey Cochran and Richard Pettengill are here from Great Moments in Vinyl, and they will be performing the music of Woodstock and some of the greatest musicians in the city all together celebrating the music of Woodstock July 25th at the Rialto Square Theater in Joliet. And welcome back, Lindsey. Welcome back, Richard.
Thank you.
Yeah,
so that, again, give credit to who that was?
That was Christian Regala doing the singing on that one. And it was sort of a rehearsal. We didn't have our full force there. We didn't have all the vocalists we needed. Our drummer had somehow, I don't know what happened to him, overslept or something like that. So it was Bill Grady playing the drums. So don't judge us by that particular arrangement.
Yeah.
But the vocalist is be amazing when we put them on stage.
Now, one of the unique things about Great Moments in Vinyl is that you guys perform songs, but you also tell stories.
I tell stories. I'll give you the backstory. And there's a great story about Santana being at Woodstock. This is where he made his fame. This is where he came to fame. Bill Graham actually had been approached to book the band Chicago at Woodstock, and he turned them down because he had this new band that he was grooming. He wanted to introduce them on the East Coast.
Yeah.
And that band happened to be Santana.
Wow.
So they came on stage. Carlos Santana, high as a kite when he took to the stage, because Jerry Garcia had given him some mescaline. And Carlos was thinking to himself, I'll be on 6 hours from now. I'll have time to come down.
Oh.
Hey, Carlos, you're on next.
Oh, no.
So he's up there just trying to hold on. And he, at one point he said, I found myself praying to God, please keep me in tune and keep me in time, and I'll never do this again. And then he adds, of course, I lied.
He also said his guitar neck looked like a snake. Well,
of course. You know, one of my favorite stories about you know, musicians taking drugs before a gig is that infamous story of Keith Moon taking horse tranquilizer before a concert. He decided to take some horse tranq before a concert. Halfway through the second song, he just completely collapses and passes out. And Pete Townsend says, you know, they carry Keith Moon off stage, you know, knocked out from horse tranq. And so Pete Townsend says, anybody in the house
play drums?
Can play drums.
Oh, this is that story.
And some kid raised his hand. He's like 18 years old. He's like, well, come on up. And this guy ended up playing drums with The Who.
Wow.
Yeah, it's a great, it's one of my favorite stories. So
it,
Richard, you said Friday around 5:30 it started.
Yeah.
Tell me about the acts and
yeah,
everything.
So, you know, finally you hear this guy, Chipmunk, his deep, rich voice. Ladies and gentlemen, Richie Havens. And it's like, I was like, yes, because I knew Richie Havens. I had his records. He had two records out at that point. I had older sisters who were cool. They had great music. So most people had never heard of Richie Havens.
Yeah, yeah.
So who's this guy? You know, but I knew all of his songs. It was great. And he came on, and it's well known that he played a long, long set, like 3 hours or so, because
is that right?
Because nobody else was there, and they kept saying, "Could you go back and do some more? Keep doing more encores." And
wow.
You know, so
wow.
And no one else was there to go on. So famously. When he did Freedom, Motherless Child, that was an improvisation. He improvised Freedom.
That's amazing.
And that's the song that put him on the map.
That's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, what was next?
After that, the Swami comes out, Swami Satchidananda, and gives this invocation, you know, spirituality, yoga, etc. So that was nice.
Was that like 45 minutes worth? Or?
No, it wasn't that long.
Oh, it wasn't that long.
No, it wasn't that long. And then a band called Sweetwater, sort of jazz fusion-y with a female vocalist that didn't make a big impact. But then there were some really great things like Tim Hardin, who I loved. If I Were a Carpenter, Misty Roses.
Yeah.
I thought he was great.
Yeah.
I loved all of his stuff. Then it started to get really good. Ravi Shankar and Ala Raka did a beautiful set of ragas. And then Arlo Guthrie comes on. You know, New York State... Throughways closed, man. A lot of freaks. and then, you know, Joan Baez finished out the night. Just magisterial, beautiful, stunning voice ringing into the night.
Yeah.
And it went till about 1:30. It was kind of raining that night, but not hard.
Yeah.
Just drizzling. It was a beautiful start, like a folk, an homage to the role of folk music in rock and roll history.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing. So that's just the first day?
Just the first night.
All right, what about the next one?
So the next day I get up and I plant myself, and this band called Quill comes on, kind of unknown and justifiably unknown. So then another band like the Keith Hartley Band. So there were some, you know, bands that weren't up to snuff that came on. But eventually we started to get like Canned Heat.
Yeah.
John Sebastian did his little set, which was nice. Mountain came on.
Yeah.
Mountain.
And you gotta love a fat guitarist.
Yeah, it was great, you know.
I love Leslie West.
You can sort of tell who's gonna come on when you see who's coming on stage and setting up equipment. This big bear of a man comes out and he starts ripping out these huge riffs and I'm like, who's that? And I actually recognized him because I had seen his first band, The Vagrants, in high school.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Back in Northport, Long Island. So I was that's Leslie West.
He's amazing. Popularity. I love those guys.
Felix Popularity.
One of my favorite songs ever is by Mountain. That's Theme from an Imaginary Western. That's one of my favorite songs of all time.
And that's the first time I ever heard it. They announced it as being co-written by Jack Bruce.
Yeah.
I was a huge Cream fan.
Of course.
Yeah.
All right, so Mountain. And then?
Mountain. Well, then, I had never heard The Grateful Dead before.
Mm-hmm.
And I know you're not a huge Deadhead, but I am.
I know you are.
So that was the life-changing moment for me.
That's, by the way, my favorite moment in Gimme Shelter is when they go, yeah, no, we're leaving.
we're out of here.
Jerry Garcia's like, yeah, no, we're gonna go.
Yeah, we're not we're not playing this thing.
Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, but they had a really hard time that night because they were getting shocked by their instruments and it's legendarily not their best set.
Yeah,
but my view is like it changed my life, so it couldn't have been too terrible.
Exactly. That's awesome.
After that, John Fogerty comes on. Creedence did an incredible high energy set.
Yeah.
And then Janis
mm-hmm.
Comes on with her Cosmic Blues Band.
Yeah.
By that time, my back was killing me. I was so tired. Believe it or not, I had to, after four songs of Janis, I walked my way back up to the trailer.
And you had to get some rest.
I fell asleep listening to Janis sing Summertime and the Living is Easy.
Oh, that's amazing. All right, and then the final day.
Well, and I have to mention that I missed the second half of Janis,
yeah.
Sly and the Family Stone,
oh, sure.
The Who, and the Jefferson Airplane.
Oh, my God.
And I was right at the top of the hill. I slept through everything.
Oh, man.
I slept like a log.
Oh, man. All right. Well, then you got some rest.
Right.
So you were ready for Sunday.
Which is really good because I had to make it all the way through to Monday morning.
Yeah.
So Sunday, Joe Cocker comes on. Incredible set. Who's this guy?
Yeah.
You know, with all of his, like, his...
Mannerisms. Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. Huge rainstorm, got soaked.
Mm-hmm.
And then finally, things get going again. You got 10 Years After, Johnny Winter, The Band... Crosby, Stills, Nash & Young, the Paul Butterfield Blues Band, Sha-na-na, my favorite of the festival.
Lindsay, you love Sha-na. You love yourself some Sha-na-na, don't you?
Sorry.
Yeah.
By Monday morning, Bowser. I was so desperate for Hendrix. It was all about waiting for Jimmy.
Yeah.
You know, I was like, oh my God, I got to see Hendrix. And then we thought after Butterfield finished that it would be Hendrix. And then it's, ladies and gentlemen, Sha-na-na. And we just all lost it. It's like, who are these greaser idiots?
Yeah.
You know, get them off the stage. But finally, Jimmy came on, and it was just like unbelievable.
Jimmy had to follow Sha-na-na?
Yep.
Wow.
Yep.
That's a tough act to follow. That must have been really amazing. The drive home.
Yeah, you know what? We were covered with layers of mud.
Yeah.
So it's Monday morning, 10, 11 a.m. We go back up to the car. The car is sunk in the mud.
Oh,
I mean, we tried to get going, and the wheels are just spinning.
Oh, man.
And we're like, what do we do now? And then along comes this farmer with a tractor. And we're like, okay, he's pulling people out, but what's he going to charge us? You know, we're over, you know, he's got us over a barrel.
Yeah.
He pulls us out, doesn't charge a dime. Have a good day.
Oh, man.
That's
amazing.
And we just tool on back home. I took a shower, a bath, a shower, and another bath, and then another shower.
Yeah. Wow. It's an incredible story. And your book, when do you see it possibly?
I'm going to be sending it out to publishers this fall and hope to get it out.
Has it been fun to write?
Yeah, very much.
Did you get in contact with people that you went with? Or
I interviewed my cousin and my sister. I even ran into my sister during Canned Heat set.
Oh, she was there.
So weird.
Yeah,
I didn't even know she was coming. It's like, hey,
and a pretty crowded place too. And you ended up running into your sister.
Yeah, I was going over to the hog farm for a bite to eat.
Yeah,
And there's my sister, and she's like, she was tripping actually. So she said she did not remember seeing me there.
Well, there you go. Yeah. So meanwhile, you got Santana on stage thinking his guitar neck is a snake.
Snake.
Right. And then your sister's tripping, doesn't even remember you.
Right.
That's an amazing story, man. Rip down some of the other concerts that you've seen. Some of the big ones besides, I mean, obviously Woodstock is massive, but.
I mean, I went to Watkins Glen a few years later with the Allman Brothers, the band, and the Grateful Dead. I saw a bunch of concerts at the Fillmore East. Richie Havens, Nina Simone, and Isaac Hayes one night.
Yeah.
Jeez.
It's amazing.
It's just kind of lucky. I was lucky. I was young in the 60s, and I had a lot of good influences from my older sisters who were into great music.
Yeah.
And they took me to a lot of stuff. I saw the Jefferson Airplane for free at Stony Brook campus outdoors. Oh, geez.
Yeah. Well, it's all. So the Woodstock adventure is going to be in the book, and I hope everybody gets it. Lindsay, a quick story before we get out of here?
Sure, right. You know, Grateful Dead were on stage getting shocked by their equipment and just having a lousy time of it. And Garcia kind of looked back on the show and really, you know, put it down, denigrated the fact that they were there. But John Fogerty followed them, and he came away with a different perspective. He said he was ready to rock out, and we waited and waited. Finally, it was our turn to go on stage. 500,000 people out in front of us. And they were asleep. These people were out, says Fogerty. It was sort of like a painting of a Dante scene, bodies from hell all intertwined and asleep and covered with mud. And this is the moment I will never forget as long as I live, John Fogerty says. A quarter mile away in the darkness on the other edge of this bowl, there was some guy flicking his lighter. And in the night I hear, "Don't worry about it, John. We're with you." I played the rest of the show for that guy.
Oh, that's great. Well, you'll hear stories like that on Thursday night, July 25th at the Rialto Square Theater as Great Moments in Vinyl play the music of Woodstock. And you're actually going to have some pictures that are going to be...
Well, actually, Baron Wolman is the Rolling Stone photographer who was there at Woodstock, covering it for the magazine.
And he's going to be there.
He's going to be there showing his photos, talking about some of his reminiscences. I want Richard to be there because obviously he's got some first-person stories. So,
it's going to be great.
Multimedia experience.
There you go. Great Moments in Vinyl plays the music of Woodstock and more. July 25th, Rialto Square Theater. Check out rialtosquare.com. Always a pleasure. Richard, good to see you again. I haven't seen you in a long time. Let's make it sooner, okay?
Yeah.
Lindsay, always a great time.
Thank you, sir.
All right, we'll take a break here for the news on 720 WGN.